Welcome to Tuesday Morning Beat. My name's Mary McHugh, and I'm so happy that Joanne DeMichel is here in the studio at KURU with me. Joanne is an advocate for fair practices for people living in manufactured home communities, often referred to as mobile home parks. And she has researched extensively, belonged to national organizations, and she wrote a report about affordable housing and aging and the aging population. Welcome, Joanne.
Thank you.
So you are an advocate, Joanne, for fair practices for people living in manufactured home communities, working to protect those communities from predatory real estate practice and to preserve safe, affordable, and secure housing for those who live in manufactured home communities. Which, thank you so much for your work, Joanne, and thank you for your time coming here this morning. So let's begin by explaining to our listeners the situation and the problems faced by many of the people who live in manufactured home communities.
Thank you. Thank you for shedding some light on this subject, which is incredibly important. I'm going to start by talking about manufactured home communities, which are commonly known as mobile home parks. But they are neither, the homes in these communities are neither mobile, nor are they temporarily parked. And that myth has continued for the past 75 years, when this type of housing has been the largest source of affordable housing in the country and in New Mexico. So the history of manufactured homes goes back, and it really started along with the history of recreational vehicles. They were both homes on wheels, they were mobile, and it wasn't until after World War II, when there was a housing shortage, that it became apparent that affordable homes could be built in manufacturing facilities and provide stable, affordable housing for our returning vets and their new young families. So this has continued, and in the 1970s, U.S. Congress set standards for these homes. So the standards were set so that there would be certain quality control. And in the 70s, the name was changed from mobile home to manufactured home. And even though the official change was made, the term mobile has been used, which I believe has been used in order to minimize the importance of these homes. So for the past 75 years, it's been a good form of affordable housing. And then in the past decade, there's been an influx of investors who have decided that it's profitable. This is a great investment. If they could buy the land that homes sit on, it could be a great investment. So what makes manufactured home communities affordable is that the homes are less expensive than a site-built home, but also because they, for the most part, sit on land that's owned by somebody else. And this land, for the most part, originally was just individuals who saw a need when there was still mobile, when homes were still mobile. They noticed that there was a need, so they created these parks, they offered facilities, and they charged a fee. As these evolved, it wasn't uncommon to have the owner of the land also living in the community. So these were communities of people who cared for each other and shared things with the owner of the land. And as of a decade ago, when big corporations started buying them, they also started a training program to train other investors to take advantage of this wonderful investment. And the president of Mobile Home University, which would train investors to buy the land under people's homes, he has been quoted as saying to, as he was training people, it's like buying a Waffle House and having your customers chained to the booth. So people have homes that they can't move. People are buying the land under the homes. They are raising rents until people can't afford them. They are displacing people by changing the use of the land. And it has been a sizable problem for at least the last 10 years, and yet it's been ignored. It's been estimated that one-fifth of the manufactured housing communities and 800,000 homes have been affected by this so far. This was an estimate by the Lincoln Institute last year. So our largest source of affordable housing is being essentially destroyed by investors. And everybody is aware that we have a housing shortage and we need affordable housing. And so investors are stepping forward and asking for money and government loans in order to build more affordable housing. And there's no controls on these new affordable housing to, or any of it, to make sure that it stays affordable. There are no controls. In January, it was reported that the Brookfield Asset Management, a private equity firm, sold $325 million of its portfolio that consisted of 19 manufactured home communities in seven states, 3,166 homes, at least that many people, with a 24% rate of return. Now, that made the front page of the paper. And what's not making the front page of the paper is the fact that these predatory investors are investing in the land underneath immobile homes with no protections. And part of the problem, I believe, is that these communities and these people are pretty invisible. And that typically people on the lower rungs of the socioeconomic ladder are invisible. Older people are invisible. Working class people are invisible. Mobile home parks have traditionally been invisible. When they were originally created, they were put on the outskirts of the town for that reason, to make them invisible. And unfortunately, that invisibility has been impacting many people and communities at large. And it's been having a negative impact on so many different people. So we have people who can't find affordable housing. We have a growing homeless population. And the solutions that I've seen have been to legislate homelessness as opposed to legislating protections for affordable housing.
You know, as I drive around Silver City, there are a lot of little manufactured home communities. There's a lot of nooks and crannies, hither and thither, tucked away, cul-de-sacs, dead-end streets, and as you mentioned, the edge of town.
One of the things that I did, so to back up a little bit, 3 years ago, I bought a home in a manufactured housing community. And I figured that I'm a single woman in my 70s, and I need to think about a place to live that would be affordable and easy and in a community. And it met all my needs. And so I had a deck and a ramp built. I bought a home in a lovely community surrounded by nature with lovely people. I have a neighbor in her 80s who a few years ago had a debilitating stroke. And shortly after that, within 6 months, both her husband and her only child died. And she continues to live in this caring community. She continues to happily live surrounded by people who care about her. I had another neighbor who died on Saturday. And
I'm sorry.
She was 97, and until 6 months ago, she was riding her tricycle to get her mail every day. So the street is private. The community is private. It's surrounded by nature. And I thought I had found my place until one day, 8 months into my happy place, I got a letter that the land underneath my home had been sold. So there was no warning, there was no offer, there was no notice, because if we were notified, we would have bought the land. There are ways to buy the land underneath these communities, because there are efforts across the country to correct this problem. And one of the solutions is to have the people in the community buy the land under it. One of the shocking things that I found in my discovery, in my research, is that these investors that are buying this land and displacing people are using government funds to do that. So there is low interest loans through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that have been used for these investors to displace people. And so the solution has also turned to housing. There was a congressional hearing about a year and a half ago where these points were brought to the attention of Congress, and there were some changes made, including finding funding available, low-interest funds available, and training that's available in order to have people buy the land under their homes. The name of the organization is Resident ROC Inc., which is resident-owned communities. It's a national organization, and they have helped hundreds of communities, I think close to 1,000 now, communities to purchase the land under their home.
In New Mexico, there was a bill introduced in February 2023. Can you tell us a little bit about that bill and where that went?
Yes. That stemmed from a conversation. Well, I started doing some research, and I noticed that there is some law on the books, but that it wasn't being enforced. So in 76, there was the New Mexico enacted Mobile Home Park Act. And it was enacted for the pecuniary interest of landowners. And it set forth very few protections for homeowners. And those protections were not being followed, and there was no agency to enforce them. And so I decided that we needed some more legislation, and I did some research, and I found that Senator Bill O'Neill, when he was a member of the House, the State House, he enacted legislation or proposed a bill that would give homeowners in manufactured home communities the right of first refusal. So if the landowner wanted to sell, the homeowners would be given an opportunity to buy it. And that failed. That was over 10 years ago, and it failed. So I contacted Bill O'Neill and asked him if he was interested in pursuing something, and he said yes. And I contacted Senator Saya, who was very responsive. She came over to my home. We visited in my living room. I gave her a three-ring binder with all the topics. We went across the cul-de-sac and sat in my neighbor's backyard with other neighbors who coincidentally turned out to be all single women, women living alone and aging in a community, who talked about the importance of their situation. Some of the people were from my community and some were from another community. And when you talk about what you refer to as trailers, there was one woman there who said, I paid $6,000 for my home, and I would be living in subsidized housing if it weren't for my home and my community. Mm-hmm. So these are issues that affect all people that are in any type of home that was manufactured. And even though the standards were set in 76, there are plenty of people happily living in their homes that were built before then.
If you're just tuning in to Tuesday Morning Beat, we are having a discussion with Joanne DeMichael, who is an advocate for manufactured home community preservation and homeowner rights, people who live in manufactured homes, and more. So Joanne, please continue. I'm, and thank you. This is very strong work. Thank you for stepping up for this.
Thanks. So Senate Bill 298 was introduced with the co-sponsors, Bill O'Neill and Saya Correa-Hemphill. And I was naive enough to think that my work was done. The bill was introduced. It's obvious that this is a a strong need for these protections. So the bill included certain things. One is that it put a limit on rent increases. What's been happening across the country is people who buy the land, they've been going in and sometimes doubling rents, and there's nothing to stop anybody from charging whatever they want. The New Mexico law requires only a 60-day notice if you're going to increase rents. My community, when the new people bought it, the rents went up 20 to 30%, depending on where people were, because up until then, they were raised very gradually. So the person who built the community and then his wife continued to, well, she lived three doors down from me. She was a very sweet woman. She had a good reputation in the community, very trustworthy. And then one morning she was gone and everything changed. But the bill put a cap, and the cap was 5%, no more than 5% increase in rent, 5% plus the cost of living. It also required notice to be given to the homeowners so that they would have an opportunity to purchase. And it gave some other changes, but it died in committee, as I have learned so many do. There was a wonderful article written by the Santa Fe Reporter in 2023 during this legislative session when Senate Bill 298 was introduced. And it was a cover story in the Santa Fe Reporter. And the story was Landlords Make the Law. And it listed the names of all of the people who are in the New Mexico legislature who are also landlords. And it also had a very thorough article that had the names and pictures of some of these legislators. It also had the list of all of the bills that were introduced in the 2023 legislative session, including Senate Bill 99, which was a simple piece of legislation. It was just one sentence, and that was the repeal of the law that was enacted in 1991 that basically prohibited local municipalities from enacting any kind of rent stabilization laws.
No, wait. I want to hear that again. That prohibited.
Yes.
Blocked it. The opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
So that the town of Silver City and every other community in the state is not allowed to enact any kind of legislation that would stabilize rents.
That explains a lot.
And so every legislative session that I've been paying attention to, there has been a bill introduced to repeal that law. And it always dies in committee.
What is your insight into why it dies? Is it because we are, it's a protection for people who are investing, for the investors?
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to, sounds to me.
Yeah. We have a huge real estate lobby. Their presence was very obvious. I've looked at probably 30 bills, 30 tenant protection bills that have been introduced over the past several years, and they have all died in committee. They've never made it to the floor, so that we don't know who's in favor of it, who's not in favor of it. There was a piece of legislation that was introduced that would have addressed manufactured housing communities by not even limiting the rent increases, but if rent increases were more than a certain percentage over a certain period of time, then the landowner was required to justify the increases to just explain any capital improvements that were made or any other reasons for the rent increase other than just profit motive. So one of the interesting things about this is that these are considered passive income investments. So the people who are promoting these as investments are promoting them as passive income investments.
Meaning you don't have to do anything.
Exactly.
You don't have to do like water, sewer, utilities.
So the way they promote them, they say you buy the land, you collect the rents, period. So what happens is that there's been a lot of deterioration going on within a lot of these communities. And so people are not taking the rents to do improvements. They're taking the rents and pocketing them as profit. And so they have no incentive or requirement to put anything back into the community. And the reason for that is they invest in the land, and land continues to appreciate no matter what.
Mm-hmm. It's like a little couple of gold coins in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. So I do know that there was, and I don't have firsthand information about this, but I do know that there is a community in Grant County that I was told by a friend that her friend was given a 30 or 60 day notice to vacate, that they had sold and that everybody needed to leave, and that that there were sewer problems and there were water problems. And I have made an effort to talk to people. Everybody within these communities are usually fairly quiet and reluctant to talk to anybody because they know that they're at risk.
They're very vulnerable.
They are extremely vulnerable. And one woman said to me, well, she didn't say it to me, she told my friend who tried to get me to have a conversation. And she said, no, she said, I had a neighbor in a wheelchair who was recently evicted for no reason, and I'm not going to even have a conversation with somebody. So she couldn't even be seen talking to me, even though I am a fellow manufactured home owner. She wouldn't even have a conversation. So
there's a lot of work to be done here.
There is a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of organizations that are working together to address affordable housing in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And there is a new coalition being formed.
Oh, excellent. Tell us about that.
I've been involved just a little bit. The name hasn't even come about. The mission statement is being worked on. There's probably at least 30 nonprofit organizations in New Mexico that are working on homelessness and affordable housing. And most of them are in the Albuquerque, Santa Fe areas. This coalition is for the purpose of coordinating the efforts. And part of their mission statement talks about from homelessness to homeownership, referring to the ability of people to buy a home is a reasonable goal.
I really appreciate you enlightening us about this, and you've done so much research on the bills and collaborating with other people. Most of your neighbors seem to be single women in their 70s.
70s, 80s, and 90s, yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the people in my community are, I think a third of the homes are couples, older couples, and even the ones with the older couples, there's usually one who is not able to get out. So the couples living in the community are, for the most part, older, and one of them would be in a nursing facility if it weren't for the spouse. The rest of them are single. Men and women, mostly women. So women retire on a fraction of what men retire on, and also live 7 or 8 years longer. So we have less when we retire, and it has to last us longer. And so it's a great advantage to be living in a community. Corey Caminos drives into our community and picks up people and takes them where they need to go. And that is such a beautiful, wonderful service. I got tears in my eyes the first time I saw it happen. Oh. Because it was just so sweet the way they picked up my neighbor. And it was the neighbor who just died on Saturday, a very sweet woman. She lived alone, and part of the reason that she was able to live alone is that her son also lives in the community. He lives alone at the other end of the street. And so when she went into the hospital about a month or so ago, she came back from the hospital, and she moved in with him. And the sister came and lived in the mother's house, and all of the neighbors were concerned and helpful. When people need to go to the doctor, it's more common to ask one of the neighbors. If somebody needs groceries, we offer for each other. I'm living in close proximity to my neighbors, something that I never thought I would like. You know, I have neighbors that can use their walker and walk over to my house. And that's very lovely. And maybe someday I'll be using my walker to walk over to somebody else's house. A few weeks ago, we had a wedding in one of my neighbor's backyards because her yard, it's the same yard that we met in with Senator Saya. And there's big trees, and it's just quiet and lovely. And so we had a wedding there. It's a very, very lovely little wedding. The community offers many things. It is a perfect situation for somebody to age in place as a single person. Last year, I found out that by reading on the front page of the Silver City Press, the property adjoining my home, 10 feet from my back door, it was reauthorized for the purpose of putting in 150 RV slots, a dining room, and other things. So it was described in the front page of the paper as a high-end RV park going in to my backyard. Now, none of us were notified of that, even though the city is required to notify people of interest. So I found out that the landowner was notified. I think there were 20 adjoining properties where the landowners were notified. But the 40 people that are living in the 30 homes immediately adjacent to this property were not notified. So when I inquired, I was told that they couldn't find our addresses. And I was told by one city council person that I'm not a homeowner. I was told that only the landowners were by law required to be notified.
So the person that owns the land where your community is situated was informed. That landowner did not inform those of you who are living there. Is that
no? The okay. Two men that own the land live in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. The 40 people who own the homes live in Silver City, and every day we shop, we volunteer, we pay taxes, we vote, we are committed to this community. And we were ignored, which I think is pretty standard for manufactured housing. And one of the reasons why for 10 years this could be going on without a lot of attention being drawn to it. I'd like to mention a movie or a documentary, and it's called A Decent Home. And it describes this situation beautifully. Because Sarah Terry, the documentarian, came across this issue and decided to make a documentary, and she traveled to different places, including Colorado and Utah, and other places while people were in the midst of this crisis, and also while people were trying to get legislation passed to protect these communities. And the documentary is beautifully done. And it says it very well. It describes the situation beautifully, and it is a documentary that we will probably be bringing to the SILCO later this year.
Excellent. And you had provided some information about the movie called A Decent Home, a statement by the writer and producer of the documentary film, Sarah Terry. Mm-hmm. And she says, "Time and again, I film in these communities. I meet compassionate, eloquent people who cherish values of community and generosity, values which seem to have been lost in an aggressively materialistic, me-first society. Unfortunately," she adds, "they are fighting for their dreams and their lives as private equity firms and wealthy investors buy up parks, making sky-high returns on their investments while squeezing every last penny out of the homeowners who must pay rent for the land they live on." I think that is really what you have just described, Joanne, that's your personal lived experience, and certainly most likely the experience of most people in the many mobile homes, manufactured homes.
You can call them unmobile homes if you like.
Well, that's another thing, is that if you have to leave the manufactured home community that you're in, and you can jack up your manufactured home and move it, it's very expensive, and then where do you move it?
Exactly. Right.
So how can people who live in manufactured home communities, how can they just stay on top of when a manufactured home community is going to be up for sale? I mean, how do you find out when the land is coming up for sale? I don't think they notify you.
They don't. You know, there is a lot that can be done and a lot that is being done. And I think it needs to be, the burden has to be on more than just the people who live in these communities. Mm-hmm. It needs to be on the towns and the states and the governments, because everybody is affected by this.
Because mm-hmm. you are citizens, as you mentioned before, taxpaying, contributing citizens.
Not only that, there is a shortage of affordable housing. There is an increase
yes.
of homelessness, and that affects all of us.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And so there are a lot of things that can be done. Sarah Terry talks about many of them. We were able to bring her to Santa Fe and Albuquerque for the showing of her documentary. I don't know that we'll be able to bring her, but we will be showing it. There are a lot of things that are being done in other states also. There are at least two states that I know of, Arizona and Washington State, that offer a displacement fund. So if their community is closed because of, for whatever reason, in Arizona, if it is a smaller single-wide home, there's a $12,500 relocation payment. And if it's a larger double-wide, there's a $20,000 relocation payment. In Washington State, it's $11,000 and $17,000. Now, this is part of the corporate welfare where people get rich and they leave people at a disadvantage, and then government comes in and rescues people. Mm-hmm. I think it's great that some governments are addressing the problem. I think others need to, including New Mexico. But I also think it's important to see it as the bigger picture, that we are allowing investors, in the name of freedom, remove the freedom from other people. There will be at least one other bill. There will be several bills introduced in the next New Mexico legislature. And I think it's important for everyone to contact their elected representative. Let them know that we'll be watching. Let them know that we don't want things dying in committee. Pay attention to where the bills are and contact every committee member. Because when we contact our elected representative and they're not in the committee where these things die, it's not really solving the problem or addressing the problem. I think letting them know that we're watching and that we will come election time. And I think now or during any time of primary or any time anybody's running for election, I think that's the time to talk to them.
And that time is now.
That time is now. Exactly.
Yes.
People who live in tentative housing situations are at risk for health issues, mm-hmm. and other issues. And when there are no limits put on rent increases for people in manufactured housing or in rentals, mm-hmm. people don't know where they will be able to live. They don't. Their housing is uncertain and it's unstable.
Thank you, Joanne. This has been very informative, and I think that we've kind of just hit the tip of the iceberg in some ways. I would welcome you to come back on another day and talk about, as legislation is introduced, to see where that bill is going, where is it headed, who are the players, and to update our listeners who can join in solidarity right. with you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to when there will be a showing of A Decent Home, a documentary.
I'd be happy to come back.
We need to have this conversation going because, once again, Joanne DeMichael, thank you so very much for joining me on Tuesday Morning Beat.